This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Jerry Bologna joins us now, Executive Director of JEDCO, Jefferson Parish Economic Development Commission. How you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you doing this morning?
I am okay, sir, other than as I left work, I saw all these little oak fuzzy things flying in the breeze, and I'm thinking this today's got Benadryl written all over it. Just
I can sympathize with that.
Let's talk about the Esplanade Mall, and then we'll work our way back to some things. What is going on with that mall? What did the kind of council look for? Tell me what the situation is.
Yeah, that certainly generated some attention last week. The existing, there are some challenges with the ownership of that mall, mainly being that they don't have clear ownership to the entire site. It's been well publicized that Dillard still owns their footprint. The Target owns their footprint within the mall property. There's a movie theater there, separate ownership. So it sort of carves out parts of the property, and it prohibits the owner, the main owner of the mall, from doing any sort of large-scale redevelopment of the entire site. And what went before the council in the city of Kenner on Friday was they were seeking a re-subdivision of another parcel to put a hotel on that site, and the Kenner council rejected that proposal with the thought that if we continue to carve it up, we're going to make it even harder for a large-scale redevelopment of that property, for one single owner to come in and do that lifestyle center, for example. And that's what certainly generated some attention.
I haven't been there, Jerry, in a long, long time, so you're going to have to walk me through this. So if you look at the area from above, if I were to look at a diagram of it, the walls are joined, the walls are common. But Dillard's is a separate piece of property from Target, which is a separate piece of property legally from the mall. Is that what we're saying?
That is correct. The current owner of the mall, they really own the interior portion of that mall. They do own the Macy's now. That's under common ownership. But the Dillard's is a separate parcel, a separate lot of record, separate parcel. The Target is the same. Movie theater, I believe, is the same. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do something expansive there, you're dealing with irregular lot lines and having to build, you can't do a square building there or something of that fact.
That seems to me to be a level of complexity like I've never heard of before. Are there precedents for this either in the area or around the country?
Yeah. No, there are certainly precedents for it, but it creates challenges, and I think that's one of the reasons that I know Councilwoman Bohannon on the parish council, and I think the Kenner City Council, their interest is how do we get control of that site or get the current owner to get the entire control? Because once one developer has control of the entire site, then you can really get creative with the site. You can put it out for an RFP to bring in a developer and really tell them what you want to see, what the city wants to see there, whether it's hotels, lifestyle center, living units, retail, all of those things. But you have one person with control of the site that can dictate that instead of being constrained by these hurdles.
How many acres is that? Do you know, Jerry?
Ooh, offhand, I'm not really sure.
A bunch,
but
right?
I would say it's definitely it would. It represents our largest East Bank redevelopment opportunity.
I guess what I'm wondering, would it be large enough if somebody were, and I don't know how Kenner would feel about this or how the Chateau residents would feel about this, if somebody wanted to buy Dillard's out, buy Target out, again, this is if my aunt had, you know what, she'd be my uncle, but if somebody were willing to buy everybody out, could this potentially be a place for maybe some upscale housing or homes or something like that? Or have y'all talked about that? I'm just thinking about stuff here.
Yeah. No, I think everything is on the table. I think one consideration, though, that is important is all of South Louisiana is heavily reliant on sales tax. Mm-hmm. And so there is a keen interest in making sure that comes back commercially in some way. Because the Esplanade at one time was the largest sales tax generator in Kenner, and they certainly would like to see it that way again, because that certainly helps with quality of life and services and things throughout the city, the more sales taxes that can be generated in the city.
So property taxes would not offset that? There would be a net loss?
It would not offset it totally, no.
Okay. So when it comes to the other mall in Jefferson Parish, Lakeside Mall, and the viability of that, here's what I'm trying to get to, Jerry, is that the Esplanade Mall, back in the day, you know, just like I do, and yep. A lot of people do, malls were rocking, right? I mean, they even had the one on the West Bank, I forgot what that was, they called that one in Marrero, that they tore down
Bell
completely.
Promenade.
Bell Promenade, yeah, and now is a Lowe's or some Walmart, something else, whatever is on the site. Nationally, tell me about the future of malls, and here's what I'm getting to my roundabout way. Lakeside remains viable, but to think that Esplanade is going to come back as a mall, that's not really going to happen, is it? Or could it happen?
Yeah, no, I think that's unrealistic. And Tommy, I don't go nearly back as far as you do, but
absolutely not. Certainly not. By the way, Jerry's got his 24th birthday coming up. Jerry, congratulations. To achieve what you have achieved at 24 years of age, my friend, you deserve some type of award or something. But anyway, go ahead, please.
No, I think what you point out is fact. Lakeside Mall has been an extreme outlier in terms of mall development across the country. Malls were totally overbuilt throughout the country, and you saw them sort of wither and die, and you see some of these outliers like Lakeside, who now is probably the largest mall property between Houston and Atlanta, certainly the most upscale or having the ability to retain those upscale brands. And then the other properties are having to figure out how to redevelop. The malls that have survived usually have some sort of experiential aspect, whether it's a ice skating rink or a Dave and Buster's type development, something that's drawing people to that property. And then the others are having to reinvent themselves. Certainly at Clearview, for example, you've seen them bring in the Ochsner Super Clinic, multifamily residential. And now that's done and they have the Target anchor, now they're moving on to the redevelopment of the interior part of that mall. But they have several anchors. Bell Promenade, you know, that one took a long time to start the redevelopment as well. And it's still not where it needs to be. But they developed a lot of those out parcels with restaurants and retail, and now you're seeing them finally start to fill in the interior part of that mall property. But across the country, you're seeing malls redevelop as cultural centers, as lifestyle centers, where you have that live work play aspect.
Somebody texted something in, and I think it's a good idea. I'll explain when I return and reveal it to you and Jerry Bologna, Executive Director of JEDCO, Jefferson Parish Economic Development Commission, when we come back. What would you like to see done with that Esplanade Mall site? 722 Traffic Now, WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, humid Wednesday morning, talking to Jerry Bologna, a youthful Jerry Bologna. 24 years old, and already the executive director of JEDCO, Jefferson Parish Economic Development Commission, which is amazing how you can have a child that's older than that, Jerry. But you know what? Look, let's not go into the physics of this and go into the time-space continuum. Let's just go with that, okay? No, but seriously, somebody texted in about an amusement park on that site because they thought that New Orleans East and the Jazzland and mess that all was failed because of the location, et cetera, et cetera. Would the site be big enough for something like that, or some kind of water park like they have in Baton Rouge where you go? Or I don't know what the trend is in the country with the viability of amusement parks or water parks. Anybody express any kind of interest in that or ideas about that?
There has been interest in that. There's been interest in sports facilities there, travel facilities, different types of sports facilities that are attractors of people to the region. So we are fielding prospects in pretty much every industry, and they have that site on their radar.
Would it be something that you would do, that you would go to a Six Flags, or I don't know who else is in the amusement park business, Dolly World, whatever, and say, hey, you know, we got this site in Kenner, be a good spot for you?
There are corporate relocation site selectors that specialize in those types of things, and we have conversations with those types of folks every day.
So
yeah, I mean that's how it happens.
So if you're talking about an IKEA, would that further complicate the situation or not?
I don't think that would complicate the situation.
Because the reason I asked that, Jerry, is that because then you're carving out a different parcel and something else that's there to prevent the whole thing from being redeveloped, right?
Well, to give you some perspective on that, the IKEA in their traditional format store, like you would see in a Houston or in Atlanta, they would need the entire mall site, inclusive of the Dillard's, Target.
Oh, really?
Everything. That's how big their stores are. So if you did something like an IKEA there, that would be the entirety of the site.
I've never been in IKEA. I get most of my furniture from, you know, inside of the road when people put it outside. It's good to know. Jerry, thank you.
You get it already assembled.
Exactly, already assembled and broken in. Any final thoughts about what else is going on in Jefferson Parish?
No, we haven't lost any momentum. It was a strong start to the year. We're excited about initiatives all across the parish. We were supposed to be down in Grand Isle today, but the wind is prohibiting us from doing that. But we're going to be launching an incredible brand for our Grand Isle off-bottom oysters. But winds all across the parish, and I'm happy to come on again and soon and talk about those.
Talk to Jordan, please. We'd love to have you. One other question I want to ask you real quick. The travel ball facility, how's that proceeding on the West Bank?
It's looking great. If you haven't been out that way, it's towards almost the rear of the TPC golf course. And I believe that's going to be coming online soon. And we're excited about the future. I think that's another draw where people are going to be coming to Jefferson Parish from all over.
I have been there. It's awesome looking. And maybe people, when they go to the golf tournament, can take a ride out there and see it. Thank you, Jerry. Take it easy.
Have a good one.
Talk to you soon. Jerry Bologna, Executive Director of JEDCO, Jefferson Parish Economic Development Commission. We'll talk to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, about the Archdiocese and their bankruptcy case and what's going on with that when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. 7:44, 16 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com. Very talented journalist, and I'm a big fan of hers. Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about the Archdiocese and a bankruptcy case. Maybe you can give me a little bit of context on this with the 5-year anniversary of the bankruptcy approaching and how we got from there to here.
Right. So on May 1st, it'll be 5 years since Archbishop Amon placed the Archdiocese in bankruptcy as a way to deal with the growing number of what were then only about 36 or so lawsuits against mostly priests and some deacons and others for past child rape and molestation. You know, it was never a move to deal with an insolvent church. Mm-hmm. At the time, he even told the Vatican very clearly that the church was very solvent, but more as a way to deal with the potential for mass tort litigation and come up with a reorganization plan so that everybody could get something, so that they didn't have to deal with a race to the courthouse and also perhaps some of the ugly things that would have come out in tort trials. But anyway, it's been, as the judge said famously a couple of years ago, a knife fight since day one. And we're now approaching the fifth anniversary. And this week here in New Orleans, we're in the middle of 3 days of sort of high-stakes mediation to try to work out a settlement. It's not at all the first time that the sides are talking, but it is the first in-person talks here in New Orleans at the law offices of Jones Walker, which represents the church. So they're trying to close a gap. Late last summer, I guess, the church filed a reorganization plan, an early draft, offering about $62 million, which is kind of lowball, but it should be said that that plan envisioned turning over the rights to the trustee, which is a technical thing, basically, but to allow the plaintiffs in the case, the abuse survivors, to go ahead and sue the insurers for additional compensation. So $62 million theoretically would not be the extent of it, but they would hopefully be able to collect from insurance companies additional monies. That's far, far short of what the survivors committee filed, their own plan seeking nearly $1 billion. However, their plan did include about $777 million from the insurance companies. The insurance companies have not agreed to pay anything close to that amount, and one of them, Sparta Insurance, is insolvent. So we don't know if we'll even get anything out of Sparta. So if you take the insurance money out of the survivors plan, there's a $150 million gap they've been working to close. And there have been comments in court to suggest that they have made some progress trying to close that gap. But because the mediation is privileged, we don't know how far apart they are at this point. But that's one of the things they're trying to work out this week. And then next week, the insurers will be invited to the table, and they'll try to work out some of the more specifics with them in terms of how they go about collecting. But, you know, this might happen. It really might not. Mm-hmm. And it's just 5 years in, as we said, on May 1st, a very painful anniversary for the survivors, many of whom are older. A lot of this abuse happened decades ago, and some of them are dead. And it's just very, very frustrating for them and their attorneys. And it's been a huge problem and a black eye for our archdiocese, as it has four archdioceses around the country. But this one has just been among the longest and more costly cases. And so it's been a hard one.
Knife fight, right?
Knife fight, yes. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Stephanie, as you said that, something just clicked in my mind. You said when he declared bankruptcy in 2000, there were how many claimants or how many abuse survivors?
Well, there had been, I can't remember exactly, but there had been about 36 lawsuits filed in state court at that time.
And since then, that number
It came after, Tommy, Archbishop Ama had published a credibly accused list of clergy. And at the time, the list wasn't even complete, and it has grown as they have added more names to it. But in the wake of that, you started to see these lawsuits, and I think the assumption was that more were coming. The bankruptcy process froze that, and now we've had hundreds of claimants file claims, basically, with the court saying, I too was, you know, abused.
So let me tell you what I heard. What I heard was that the Archbishop filed bankruptcy. At that time, he told the Vatican, the church, the archdiocese was not insolvent. And here's what clicked in my head, Stephanie, is he knew the extent of what was being covered up, what was being hidden, and he knew that there were going to be a lot more claimants. So he figured to get ahead of it, now's the time to file bankruptcy. Would that be a false presumption on my part, or do we have any facts to back that up at all?
No, I don't think so. You know, but the interesting thing, I mean, just as a legal argument, the churches across the country, he didn't come up with this plan, right? He was taking a page from a playbook that other dioceses around the country adopted almost two decades ago, going back to the early 2000s, when the extent of this clergy abuse crisis became public. And so, you know, The idea is to approach these kind of cases where you're going to have many, many claims, whether it's dozens or hundreds, as a mass tort, like the asbestos litigation or the Purdue Pharma opioid abuse litigation. And you basically put the institution in bankruptcy, and then you come up with a way to divide up however much money everybody agrees to so that everybody gets something, and that you don't have the first three guys who filed lawsuits have hellacious, you know, and very sensational trials with huge jury awards, and then the church really does have nothing left. I mean, there are people that say, yeah, but that's not what bankruptcy court should be for. And there are other people who say, and people apart from the church, I mean, I'm not at all trying to be an apologist for the Catholic Church, right, but it's a legitimate and very interesting legal debate that, like, if you Googled it around, I could read about it all day. It's very, very interesting. I don't know.
Let me take a break, Stephanie.
The best way to do it.
And we'll pick it up when we come back. And I think one difference that we can address when we come back is if Gregory Amon was acting as the CEO of a subsidiary of a company, a la Entergy New Orleans, as opposed to the parent company to shield the assets, that's one thing. But when you're talking about the archbishop of a church who had their hands in a cover-up, a nasty, ugly cover-up, and exposing victims to predators without any knowledge or warning anybody, then you have to look at it, well, is that really the morally responsible thing to do? And is you, when you say the church, we got to distinguish that from the archdiocese, because Lord knows the Roman Catholic Church has assets. If you want to break it down to a sub-entity like the archdiocese, well, that's different. We'll talk more. We're going back 752, 8 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 756, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, proud alum of Academy of the Sacred Heart, and also LSU, right?
And UNO.
Did some time at UNO. I was going to say that.
From UNO.
I was going to throw that in. You're going to get to it. Absolutely.
Love them.
Me too. Do you teach at LSU, Stephanie, or not?
No, don't you think I should?
I
always wanted to pick up a class there.
I honestly think you
should. Thank you. Well, maybe one day.
I am a big fan of yours. I mean that sincerely. Let's talk about so what I mentioned before, if the archbishop, I don't know if you want to get involved here or not, because you're a reporter.
Right?
I don't want to go into opinion, but let me phrase the question this way. What the archbishop is doing for a Fortune 500 company would be what he should be doing to act in the best interest of the stockholders and the assets of the corporation. Would that be accurate or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, the issue is really, do you want to, and you know, reasonable minds may differ on this, but if you want to keep this archdiocese as a going concern so that it can continue to do its mission, then you can't liquidate everything. If you believe that the wrongs that they admit they perpetrated and covered up are so grievous that all, you know, everything's on the table, then you liquidate everything and you give the survivors what they deserve, but then you don't have a church anymore. And I think that's probably the difference, you know, and I think there are those who believe that it should be shut down because you really probably, or, you know, I mean, that's one of the issues.
And to be clear, again, much like companies have different affiliates or different sub-entities to protect the assets of the major corporation, it is not the Catholic Church that is alleging bankruptcy or saying that they have no assets. It is the Archdiocese of New Orleans.
Correct.
And what happens from here? The lawyers continue to make out. I have a friend that's in estate law, and he says sometimes, and I'm not trying to make it about this at all because the victims have a rightful claim, but he says, you know, y'all fight it out, and whatever's left you can have after you pay me. In a way, are the lawyers the big winners here so far?
The lawyers have made a fortune over this, and the lawyers on both sides, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's $44 million and counting. Every month, the monthly statements come out, and the numbers just keep going up and up and up.
So where do you think we are?
Where is that?
A week, 2 weeks from now, a month from now?
I could not say. I could see this thing, you know, come, because just remember this, even if they do reach a settlement, there are still a lot of hurdles that we can talk about on a future show have to be overcome. And it may not get confirmed. It may not be approved.
Stephanie,
it may
not happen. Let's plan on that. We're running out of time. And I also want to have you back to talk about what happens if the case were to be dismissed. And Meredith Grable, the judge, has suggested that. So Stephanie Regal will come back and talk more about it on another day.